My name is Donald Smith. We're at the home of Mrs. Florence Grossman. Her husband, Dr. Henry Grossman, graduated from Cornell University's College of Veterinary Medicine in 1938. So I'm here with Mrs. Grossman and one of her daughters, Nancy, and I would like her to describe some of the characteristics of her husband, who died, unfortunately, in about the year 2000, but who is fondly remembered by you, Mrs. Grossman, and you remember so much of his life as a veterinarian. Could you start by describing how he became a veterinarian? What led up through his childhood to have his interest in veterinary medicine, and how he became a veterinary student?
Well, he became a veterinary student because of a fluke. His brother graduated from Cornell in 1927, and one of his pals at school was a man named Frank Bloom. Frank Bloom had studied veterinary medicine and opened a small animal practice. My husband had been going to the ag school at Cornell, and Frank Bloom suggested to my brother-in-law that perhaps my husband Henry would be interested in veterinary medicine. So Henry looked into it and decided he would give it a try, and he applied to the veterinary college and was accepted. He started at Cornell in 1931. He was a student and then dropped out for a few years because of financial conditions at home. That was a time of the Depression, and money was not available to continue his education. However, after a couple of years of being away from college, he returned and got his degree in 1938. He always wanted to have his own practice, and at that time, we were married. My mother had a tremendous home, and he decided that that would be the place to start. We cleared out a few of the rooms in the house, and it became a veterinary hospital. However, the house was located on a side street. There was absolutely no way of knowing that he was there, and we decided, since there was no money coming in, he thought maybe he ought to work for the Bureau of Animal Industry. Well, that idea didn't appeal to me at all, and I said, no, that's not the way to go. So he rented a third story in a business building on Flatbush and Forster Avenues in Brooklyn, and at that time, you were allowed to advertise. So he had a neon sign made in the shape of a Scotty. Scotties were very popular then because President Roosevelt had his little Fowler. Fowler was given a lot of publicity. So this sign was made in the shape of a Scotty, and it said Dog and Cat Hospital. It was quite something to see, very different from every other sign on Flatbush Avenue, which is a very busy thoroughfare. He practiced up on the third floor. At that time, money was very scarce. My mother lost her home, so my husband and I moved into the hospital with our first child. We lived there for a while. The waiting room became our living room after the office hours were over, and my daughter really became very fond of the animals in the hospital. She would get up in the morning, climb out of her crib, and play with the animals. To this day, she still is an animal lover. When the second floor became available, we moved downstairs, and we occupied both floors. Soon after that, I was pregnant with my second child, and it was time to move on out of the hospital, which we did, and rented a home which was not too far from the office. When the street floor became available, my husband decided at that point that we should buy the building, which we did. He hired an architect who laid out the plans for the hospital according to my husband's directions, and that's the beginning of the small animal practice. A very interesting practice, the only one around in the neighborhood at that time. My husband just loved every minute of being a practitioner. We also decided at that time we should have some help in the hospital, and he always had a veterinarian working for him. Subsequently, he took in a partner, and everything worked well. The partnership lasted 10 years, and the doctor who was with us decided that he would either have the practice for himself or he would leave, which he did. As I said, he certainly took advantage of having professional help. It gave us time to do a lot of traveling. We traveled all over the world. He always kept in touch with the hospital, and that's the way things went until he became ill and had to give up practice. But all the years that he was in practice, he really loved. He enjoyed the clients. They liked him. He was always very outgoing and always had good relationships with our clients, who were really very loyal to him and stayed with us for many, many years. I must say it's been a wonderful experience for me. I also enjoyed everything about veterinary medicine and often helped my husband in the office. It was a pleasurable experience. I guess I always liked animals myself, so it was very easy to me to fit into this role.
Describe what you would do in holding animals and helping him during those early years.
Well, sometimes I must say I cleaned cages if I had to. I helped restrain the animals. I sometimes assisted in surgery, not actually doing anything, but I did make the surgical packs and make sure that everything was in those packs that he needed for the particular procedures. He did lots of spays and lots of neutering of cats, and I can remember holding those cats just a certain way so that he could do whatever he had to do. I acted as a receptionist many times. I did the payrolls, paid the bills, did all the things that I could do to help ease the responsibilities. I really enjoyed being and spending time in the hospital. And I always enjoyed spending time with my husband. Unfortunately, he became ill and had to give up practice. When we closed the practice, neighbors who didn't even have animals came over to us and said how much they enjoyed having the hospital there and wished us luck. And it was a very sad occasion when we had to evacuate the building because we wanted to sell it at that point. There was no point in keeping it. My husband practiced for 60 years, was very active not only in the practice but at the university. We always went up to the conferences in January, although we hated the weather. It was always so cold, but it was great seeing classmates of his and other veterinarians that we used to see through the ages. My husband was very active in the City Society, the State Society, was chairman of one of the programs for the centennial meeting in New York City. He loved doing all those extra things. He instigated the practice of having postgraduate courses in New York City. He arranged to have the classes at the New York University Medical Center, and he had people come from various schools throughout the country to give lectures, as well as professors from Cornell. That was, I think, one of the highlights of his being a professional. He authored a couple of leaflets, one on public relations and another which was titled "So They Have Veterinarians in the Armed Force," and many thousands of pamphlets were distributed through the country. He also spoke at the high schools about the profession, that is the high schools in the city. They were always happy to have him there, and students responded very well with all kinds of questions, which of course he answered.
Tell us about your friendship with Dr. Zimmerman and Mrs. Zimmerman.
Well, there was of course certain men in the profession who we become very friendly with. One of them was Irving Zimmerman, who practiced in Manhattan, and his wife Pearl. I don't think she had anything to do with the practice, but she certainly was a good cheerleader for him. He was a very quiet man, but accomplished a great deal in his quiet manner. Another friend of ours, Stanley Penny, was a great friend. He practiced in Brooklyn and subsequently moved to Arizona. I still am friendly and in contact with his wife. We had many friends in the profession. In fact, most of our social life was spent with veterinarians. We used to get together at each other's homes, have dinner parties. When I lived on Long Island, I always had a summer party and had like 50 people, all veterinarians from Brooklyn, New York, Long Island. We always had a wonderful day at my home, and it was just, as I say, just a great experience.
He was the president of the New York State Veterinary Medical Society, and that meant a great deal to you and to him.
Yes, my husband was president of the New York State Society, the New York City Society. He worked on many committees, program chairman, public relations. He did a lot of planning for the meetings, state chairman. State Society had a meeting in the city. He was in charge of television program. I remember his being worried about pigs coming from New Jersey, and he was concerned about their being here on time so that the doctors could operate on them with the television going, so that the procedures were available to everybody who came to the meeting. Always had something doing for the women, who had a very good relationship with each other. He took part of the women's auxiliary, which of course did a little fundraising for the students. I was president of the city auxiliary and the state auxiliary as well. And I must say, being president of the state auxiliary was rather exciting, because I had to have conversation and correspondence with people throughout the state, which gave me knowledge of how people worked in other places besides New York City. It was very illuminating to hear how they conducted their lives and their husbands' practices. When I was president of the State Society, I used to go to Ithaca for the meetings once a year, and it was a great privilege to meet some of the faculty who were active, as well as the wives of the doctors. When I was first married, my husband was a junior, and so I spent a year up in Ithaca, freezing, going downtown Ithaca to go to work, and then walking up that hill to go home, sometimes for lunch, and then after the day was over. We had a very nice little apartment and was certainly happy there. I can remember being at Cornell that year when I was working. Thanksgiving was coming, and the university had a tremendous Thanksgiving dinner for all the students who couldn't go home. It was given in Willard Strait. That was quite an experience, seeing all those foreign students and others who came from a great distance and couldn't make it home for the weekend. Christmas holidays, the same thing. Of course, I had a job and I had to be there. So we spent our Christmas on the campus of college. It was always pleasant for me to be in college town. I think it's a very invigorating experience to live in a college town. There's so much to do, and it's so nice to see all the students scurrying about their business on campus.
You met Mrs. Hagen.
Yes, at that time that we were there, Dean Hagen was the dean, and his wife was very active in the student body. She was a tremendous woman, did a lot of good. Everybody was very fond of her. At that time, there were only 35 students in a class, and so throughout the year, they invited some of the students, all of the class, and as a matter of fact, but not at one time. They were collectors of puzzles. And after dinner, we spent the whole evening working on the puzzles, and it was a wonderful experience. I can remember it to this day. They had a puzzle of their own that they performed, and we begged them to tell us how they solved that puzzle. And at the end of the evening, they told us, and it was really quite simple. Everybody was sitting around in a circle, and I can remember Mrs. Hagen having a cane and pointing out at everybody, and then suddenly she would say, "The magic circle is now open," and we would have conversation. And then at one point she would say, "The magic circle is now closed," and Gene Hagen would go into another room, and then he'd come back, and he always chose the right person that she had picked out. And we couldn't figure out how they did that until at the end of the evening they told us that it was the person who spoke the last, which was the one that was the magic person. So that was a lot of fun. The dean and his wife were very helpful to the students, and they were very gracious and really held in awe. We all thought they were something very special.
Could you tell us about your husband growing up? He was separated from his siblings growing up.
But my husband,
and then he also had a dog.
My husband grew up in a family with, of course, his mother, father, and three brothers. And their dog, Leechy, I think the dog's name was Pekingese. Unfortunately, my husband's father died at a very early age, and so my mother-in-law couldn't manage to have all the children home. So the two older ones went to the Hebrew Orphan Asylum, and my husband went to a foster farm in Connecticut. It was a tobacco farm, and his job was getting the worms off the tobacco leaves. He really enjoyed being with that family. He always spoke very highly of them.
Let me just add that my father was three when his father passed away, and he was in the foster home until he was seven, at which point his mother had resettled with a new husband and was able to bring all the children home.
And he spoke very highly of his stepfather, who introduced the family to developing film. And he set up a dark room in the basement, and all the boys became very interested in photography. And my husband always developed his own film.
I have one other question. There is a scholarship at Cornell for veterinary students in your husband's name. How do you regard that?
Well, when my husband passed away, he had such affection for the university and the school, and I just felt that I had to do something in his memory, because I thought he deserved that. And so I set up a scholarship. Well, it really isn't a scholarship fund. It's really an endowment fund, and the purpose of it is not to give any money to the smartest person, because the smart ones always seem to be able to get assistance on their own. When we were up at Cornell, it was tough going. I had a little job, but it didn't really earned that much. I had to send money home, and there wasn't very much money coming from my husband's family. His mother was gone, and his stepfather, of course, was gone. So every penny that I made, of course, went to our expenses. I thought it would be helpful to people who really needed something to help them pay off their rent, or a loan, or whatever. If they needed money for food, there would be something there. And I must say, it's worked out very well. Every year, somebody applies for the endowment fund, and whoever they seem fit would be given the money. There was no obligation to return it. It was just something to tide them over for whatever purpose. And I have really received wonderful letters of appreciation for different people at the school, and it always makes me feel really great to know that I'm able to help somebody.
Now, it's my understanding that my father was especially thankful to Cornell, not only because it enabled him to become a veterinarian and to live the very comfortable life that he led, and to associate with the wonderful people with whom he associated, but that when he originally was at Cornell in the vet school and ran out of money, and his mother passed away, he went and talked to the dean, and he said he could not afford to continue in school, and the dean without hesitation told him not to worry, that he would be helped out financially. Eventually he did decide that he would take some time off and not depend on the school, but he was very thankful to the school for offering and for helping him when he really needed help.
Actually, he was very proud of the fact that he asked for $800, which was a tremendous amount of money at that time, and they never asked him for a
co-guarantor.
And he always thought that was wonderful.
So that they would just trust him.
So that was another reason I'm happy that I could.
Well, your husband and his practice are very well known in the state of New York. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you do this interview was because he was such a major force for veterinary medicine here in New York and across the state. And so I really want to thank you for doing this interview. And I very much appreciate your willingness to open up your life and his life for the future generations at Cornell University. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.